My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/MPN to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/MPN. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Want Instagrammers and YouTubers to mention your brand? Or do you want to influence an audience to buy your product? I'm Jason Falls, author of the book Winfluence, Reframing Influencer Marketing to Ignite Your Brand. In this podcast, we explore the people, companies, campaigns, and stories that illustrate the difference between using influencers and actually influencing. Welcome to Winfluence, the Influence Marketing Podcast. Hello again, friends. Thanks for listening to Winfluence, the Influence Marketing Podcast. A couple of weeks ago, we had an interesting conversation about race with talent manager Joanna Voss. She represents almost exclusively women of color, though she is not of color herself, and most of her clients are of the Hispanic Latina variety. The natural next step in this conversation, for me anyway, was to dive deeper into the African-American perspective too. It just so happened that Lindsay Gamble reacted to and commented on the social content around that Joanna Voss episode. He is the influencer marketing and innovation manager at Maverick, which is one of the top enterprise influencer marketing platforms and service providers out there. So we hopped on a call and chatted a bit. Then I extended an invitation for him to come help us carry this conversation forward. Gamble actually sees the influencer marketing space from a few angles, and you know I like guests that have that varied perspective on things. He started out in the social media world as a hip-hop blogger. He built one of the more influential platforms for that topic in the Boston area after graduating from Bryant College, where he played football. Because he knew the content creation and social media space well, he wound up in roles at companies that wanted him to create content or connect with those who do. He landed at Maverick in 2018 and managed a set of client strategies. He's now in a leadership role where he gets to advise across clients on innovating in the space, which sounds like my dream job in a lot of ways. We talk about all that, but also get into the thicker conversation about race and influencer marketing. What impact did the social unrest and issues in 2020 have on the conversation? Is that swell of attention gone? Or are brands still pursuing making strides in that area? Is there a way to solve the pay gap issues between white creators and creators of color? For someone who works at a software and services vendor in the space, but knows the creator side as well, Lindsay brings an interesting perspective to the conversation. Before we get to that, it's time to get back to hearing more about how clients of our sponsor Tagger use that platform. Tagger is a complete influencer marketing software suite that allows you to find, connect, and collaborate with influencers, execute campaigns, and measure success. We've been talking to TJ Ferreira, who co-founded Bubs Naturals, a health supplements company, about how he uses Tagger. So you love the ability to kind of pull data and analyze your influencers. I would imagine then that probably informs the measurement and knowing what you get out of a campaign at the end, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there is post-campaign measurement that we have, and we check in on that quite often as we're running our monthly campaigns for branded content, et cetera. We also have a number of metrics on the back end because obviously we're placing ads against that. We're looking for true ROAS, true first-time buyers, you know, repeat buyers. What does the retention rate on LTV look like if it's a warm ambassador or a warm influencer? But from the front end, in terms of ease of use and quick in process, it streamlined all the data collection, all the decision making, and you know, again, truncated it to days opposed to a week and a reach out and everything else. So it's a more all-inclusive for us. And then instead of tying three systems together, and those systems could have been Google Sheets and Instagram and, you know, and Facebook, and just having a human piece those data points together, it really streamlines all of that.
Thanks to TJ and to Bubs Naturals for sharing their use of Tagger. To learn more and get a demo to see if Tagger is right for you, just visit jason.online/tagger today. That's jason.online/tagger. And my influencer marketing podcast recommendation this week is The School of Influence. It's hosted by Amanda Russell and Neil Schaefer, both of whom also have books on the market about influencer marketing. Their interviews focus on how to leverage influencer marketing, but feature practitioners, experts, and the influencers themselves. If you like Winfluence, you'll probably like The School of Influence. Just search for School of Influence wherever you get your podcasts. We get deeper and more honest on race and influencer marketing. Lindsay Gamble of Maverick is next on Winfluence.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/MPN to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/MPN. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Heiler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe. So Lindsay, catch us up a little bit here on your background. Tell me how you came to be at Maverick.
Yeah, my journey is unique. I went to college, I studied communications. I always had a goal to work in social media. My overall goal was to play professionally, and I took it as far as I could, and you know, that was a long shot. So I didn't do any internships when I was in college, but when I got out, you know, I kind of wanted to just work, so I temped a little bit, and I ended up at Dana-Farber, which is a cancer hospital. So I worked there for 6-7 years just to pay the bills and kind of get started. But on the side, I started a music blog called Harden to Paint, and basically I kind of used that as my internship to really learn everything about social media, digital marketing, writing, everything around the digital world. And so after doing that for 5 or so years, I was able to leverage that into a influencer marketing agency. Worked there for 6 months, unfortunately got laid off, but I learned a ton. I learned kind of the whole process of influencer marketing. And then, you know, during my time of job searching, during being laid off, I came across a company called Maverick. You know, it seemed similar to what I was already doing. It was a startup. It just seemed something a little different. They talked a lot about culture. And so I applied and, you know, everything worked out. And so fast forward to now, I've been at Maverick almost 3 years, or probably 3 years by the time that this podcast is published. It's been a great opportunity. You know, we're one and all influencer marketing platform. So we're really in the pulse of everything creator economy right now.
So you kind of backed into it by being a content creator as opposed to, like, you know, intentionally going to school to learn all this digital marketing stuff, even though you did certainly learn it. But tell me a little bit more about that blog. When did that start and how big did you get?
Yeah, I think it was maybe 2011. So maybe the year after I graduated. You know, it was cool. I just kind of built from the start. I covered the local hip hop scene, the national hip hop scene. I was able to interview some major artists such as Kendrick Lamar. A lot of people that came into the city, and that allowed me the opportunity to start throwing events, doing some artist management, helping them with their careers. And then also kind of working with some brands such as Converse and Skype, and kind of acting as a content creator influencer, which I didn't really realize at that time. But, you know, I would say it was one of the pivotal websites in the Boston hip hop scene at that time.
Nice. That's good stuff, man. That's, I mean, if you're interviewing Kendrick Lamar, I mean, hell, I would have just retired right there. Just been like, okay, I'm done. I've accomplished what I need to accomplish here. We can go sit on the beach now. That's good stuff. So, you know, obviously you landed at Maverick. And so let's talk a little bit about Maverick. I mean, we've talked a little bit about it here on the show. I know it's a kind of a soup to nuts, all in one influencer platform, but what is it about Maverick that makes you guys different? And what type of clients do you guys work with?
Yeah, so Maverick is really geared towards the enterprise consumer brands. So we like to work with the large brands that have several brands under them, and we really believe in influencer marketing at scale. So it's evolved over my 3 years, but basically we help customers run influencer marketing campaigns, but social proof campaigns, and we really believe in social proof. And so everything that we do with customers internally is all around social proof. What I think makes Maverick really unique is that we support all the different use cases with influencers. Some people just see influencer marketing as having content creators create content. We support ratings and reviews. We support, research and working with creators to get product feedback. We have worked with creators and brands as consultants. But and then also along with that, we see a lot of value in the different tiers of influencers. So everything from your advocates and loyalists that maybe don't produce great content, but they're great at spreading the word on behalf of your brand, to all the way up to the macro mega influencers that are, creating content for a living.
That's nice. So you guys don't subscribe to the one size fits all approach of, hey, let's just go buy a bunch of Instagrammers to hold your product, which is good. And unfortunately what some people do, but, so this is a podcast and people obviously can't see you, but just to make sure everybody knows, you are African American, and that leads the context into what I want to kind of touch on next. I wonder for you, how have the social events of the last, 18 to 24 months changed the landscape of influencer marketing? Because the issues I think are still there. But certainly the conversation about the issues has changed. How are things evolved since you've been at Maverick?
Yeah, I think the first thing is that there's actually conversation around it, right? To be honest, in the first 2 years of my career at Maverick, or even at the influencer marketing agency before, there was very little talk about D&I. There was very little talk about the social events. And I think, last year and change, whenever the time was, I'm kind of losing track of time now. That really created a lot of conversation. It really brought some issues to the forefront that really were relevant to influencer marketing, kind of what we do in marketing, but like a lot of times they aren't talked about. And so I think it was really unique, working as an African-American in the marketing industry, especially influencer marketing. There's not a lot of people that look like me, at least from what I see. And so it was kind of interesting to see that brands started to kind of really, talk about it more. And it really felt like the first time that people actually knew that it had to be something that was talked about. And so I think it has a profound effect. And I think, even today, even though it's not one of the major issues that you see in PR or on websites, it's something that everyone's talking about behind the scenes.
Yeah. I wonder if the sudden participation of brands in that social conversation last year, did that surprise you at all? Did any of it come off as maybe disingenuous, or was it a situation where you were like, thank God they're finally paying attention?
Yeah. So I think it didn't surprise me. If you think about the way marketing companies work, they always go where the attention is. And whether it's key moments in time or holidays or, cultural events or sporting events. So all the brands kind of gravitated toward this because it was pretty much you had to say something. But what I really saw that was interesting and I was less surprised was that, a lot of brands stood in the middle where there was kind of a right choice, or there was opportunity to make the right decision. But a lot of them really played it safe. And I understand it from a business aspect, but I thought this is one of the things where you can't play it safe. You have to kind of have a stance and, do what's right. I think there was a lot of instances where things came off as fake or not really authentic. It was more so that they were checking a box. And I just remember talking to my friends about it. But what was really like, you know, interesting was like, I actually kind of cried about it one day around, I think it was the weekend that there was one of the protests and riots and whatnot. I can't remember exactly when, but it really did feel like the first time that the world kind of cared about African-Americans or minorities in a sense. You know, I've always understood kind of, you know, how things have been, but this was like the first time that people that didn't look like me actually stood up. And so that was really unique. I think even like the people within Maverick and just people that I knew. And so it kind of felt like a changing point, not necessarily the solution, but like, okay, we're finally getting, you know, we're taking a step forward where like the conversation's there. And that's where you really have to start.
Wow. It's really powerful to hear you say that. And in a positive, exciting way, but it's also like devastatingly disappointing to hear you say that because it took until 2020 for this to happen. But again, I guess that's my white guy reflection on things is, God bless. Why has it taken so long? And I'm sure that, you know, you and others, who are Black have probably been screaming the same thing for a long time. I wonder, I'm really curious. So, you know, the summer of 2020 was, you know, this sort of linchpin moment in history. The Black Lives Matter movement, you know, was around, but it kind of exploded. And then, of course, unfortunately, George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, those things happened. And at the same time in the influencer marketing space, like the Black Lives Matter movement, the pay gap issue was there and people were talking about it. There were a lot of hand raisers, especially on the African-American side and the people of color side saying, hey, there's a pay gap and we need to do something about it. But I think the summer of 2020 with everything that happened outside of influencer marketing really brought that pay gap issue and the diversity issue into the conversation at a very much higher pronounced level of awareness. Do you get the sense now a little bit more than a year later that's tapering off or not? Because the problems aren't solved, I don't think. And I don't hear as many people talking about it as often and certainly not as intensely as they did a year and a half ago. But I wonder if there's a concern that we had this little spike and now it's just let's get back to the status quo.
Yeah, I think kind of the reason why it's not talked about as much is because we're kind of getting back to normal life. Of course, things aren't normal from the pandemic aspect, but when you think about all those things that happened, a lot of us, we were stuck inside and it was like the perfect timing in a sense. Of course, the pandemic, terrible. There's not anything good about it, but like, I really don't think there would have been conversation around Black Lives Matter or even with those events if things didn't kind of slow down a bit. And so now that we're kind of back up and, you know, it feels a little normal, you're wearing a mask, you're getting vaccinated, you know, this is still a big issue. People have kind of adapted to that life. And so I think the brands that really care about it and the stakeholders that care about it are still doing what they need to do. But it's, you know, I feel like some people just kind of checked off the box and said like, hey, we kind of did our PR thing. Like we did that. Like, let's get back to business. I think, you know, it's one of those things that's not going to be solved overnight. It's really like, if you really care about the issue, you know, it's always on approach. I think when it comes to the pay gap issue is that's not going anywhere. If you think about it, there's always an influencer or a group of influencers that's calling out a brand or platform for paying them less, especially with the creator economy. That's coming out even more. And so that's not going anywhere. It just kind of the conversation has shifted a little bit. But I also think the events of last year empowered people to speak up. And they saw like, hey, if you have a voice, you have a platform, you have some type of audience, whether it's small or big, if you say something, people will listen. And if you say enough, the people that you're talking to will have to listen because it's going to reflect poorly on them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's for sure. So let's talk real specifically about the pay gap. And there's a couple different ways that people interpret that. Obviously there's the pay gap between white creators and creators of color. There's also the gender pay gap, you know, between males and females, which in some industries is actually upside down from what you would think. You know, in the fashion style industry, I think some of the surveys and whatnot that I've seen, women make significantly more than men. But in others, it's the opposite, and it certainly shouldn't be. I wonder from your perspective on either the gender or the race or other gap fronts, what do you think we need to do as an industry to close these gaps and make pay more equitable for everyone who creates?
Yeah, I think it comes down to maybe like three or four things. I think the first thing is just transparency, right? Marketers need to be more transparent about what they're paying creators for. Historically, influencer marketing has been like you pay someone based on their follower count. And so that's been the standard. And so someone has 100K based on that concept or standard, they're going to receive more than someone has a, you know, that has a 10K following. But things are changing. There's so many different use cases. A lot of people work with creators based on, you know, getting content assets that could be more valuable than just one post. So there needs to be that transparency between the marketer when they're working with creators, like, hey, we're paying you for your audience. You know, we're paying you for an asset. We're paying you for whatever reason it is, and kind of create that conversation so that the creator knows that, hey, I might have this many followers, but this scope of work is based on me creating assets, which should maybe less than what would cost, what I would price for posting on my channel. So just that transparency between on both sides too, like how do creators price themselves? I think as a marketer, I always worry about that too. There's a lot of different factors. So that conversation around, you know, pricing and what you're willing to pay creators is the first step. I think the second step is benchmarks, right? Just having more data around, you know, use cases. Again, going back to influencer marketing really being based around follower count and how people pay. Most of the benchmarks are around that. If you have 10K followers, you get this. If you have 100K, if you have a million, this is what you get. But that data is very limited. Everyone's working off of different data. You know, Maverick has its own set of data. I'm sure your company has their own set of data. I'm sure, you know, brands and everyone else has their own set of data. So what we're seeing is a little different. But the more data we can get around across platforms, brands, the better, and across use cases. So what is the cost for an asset that's going to be used for paid media versus an asset that's being posted to the creator's channel? I think the other thing, maybe most important, is like more diversity. You know, the people that are running these campaigns are, you know, I'm probably one of the few, I'm probably not only being African American, but being a male in influencer marketing, you know, it's limited. And so platforms, brands, just everyone needs to kind of diversify the people that are holding the budgets, that are running these campaigns, so that they can be able to utilize their perspective when it comes to paying creators. I think for me, like, you know, as being a African American, a black male, like, I'm always going to stick up for the people that look like me, but also the people that don't look like me. That's just, you know, otherwise no one else would do it. And so I think the more diversity you can have, the more perspective that you can have, and the more that you're able to rely on your teammate, whether it's a brand partner or at a platform, to be able to speak up on behalf of creators that may be considered underrepresented groups and whatnot. And so I think those are kind of the key three things. I think another one is just, you know, creators are important. You know, if you hire someone to do plumbing, you're not going to, you're not going to shortball them, right? You're going to give them what they want. It's all based on supply and demand. So there has to be that acknowledgement of creators, you know, being businesses themselves, and they have their own price points.
Yeah, that's very true. And I think a lot of people these days are doing a better job of sort of advocating for the, you know, you're not just paying for the access to the creator's audience. You're paying for their time. You're paying for their talent. I love the fact that, you know, when you were talking about Maverick earlier, you talked about, you know, sourcing influencers for, you know, product R&D and feedback. You know, how do creators price themselves for that? Is that an hourly rate? Is that a flat fee? And I think having these conversations, you know, probably there might be an influencer listening to this that never even considered that they could be used for product R&D. And they certainly aren't going to price that based on how many followers they have. They're going to price that based on the time and energy that they put into that particular project. So continuing to have these conversations is obviously helping. I wonder, though, what role do you think that Maverick, not specifically Maverick, but software companies like Maverick, sort of the vendors, have to play in that transparency and whatnot versus maybe what the brands and maybe even the creators and agencies have to play in that?
I think platforms or even agencies that operate similar to platforms can play a really strong role, right? You know, working at Maverick, or when you work with a platform, you get to work with hundreds of brands. You know, small startups all the way to the biggest of brands. And really you have that opportunity to, you have so many different touch points to educate your customers and really kind of be the voice of the creator and be the voice of the marketer at the same time. And because those brands are hiring you for a service or tech, whatever it is, they're already looking for you, looking towards you for expertise. So you're already teed up. It just really takes a marketer that's really confident to be able to like share, you know, those insights and be able to flag, you know, things around DE&I or things to that could be sensitive and things that could impact brand safety. And some brands are going to, you know, say, hey, thanks, but we still want to do this way. And that's totally fine. But at least you kind of let them know, hey, like if you do this type of campaign or this language or, you know, you offer creators this, like this is what could happen based on other scenarios or just based on, you know, best practices. And so I think we have probably the most, we can have the most influence in the industry because we get to touch so many different aspects of it, especially on the creator side too, right? We're not only work with brands, but we're briefing creators and we can kind of have those conversations and gather that feedback, whether it's through a survey or just informal conversation.
So let's talk a little bit more about your role at Maverick, because I was really fascinated when you were describing this to me a couple of weeks ago when we were talking. I was like, Jesus, that sounds like my dream job. So give us a little bit more insight in what your day-to-day role is within sort of the innovation space there at Maverick.
Yeah. So my role is really a jack of all trades. It's focused around innovation and really allows me to touch different parts of the business. So previously, for the first 2 years of my Maverick career, I had a book of business. I was helping brands execute influence marketing campaigns, providing strategy, you know, similar to like an agency role, like strategist. And Maverick was great enough to allow me to move into this role, which they built based on a need for the company, but also my passion points. I love looking at, you know, big trends and seeing how they impact influencer marketing, social media, and everything else along those lines. And so my role is really focused on keeping Maverick at the forefront of influencer marketing. So supporting our internal teams and our customers and helping them execute campaigns on different platforms and different influencer marketing use cases. So, you know, Twitch, not necessarily new, but something that marketers are still trying to figure out. You know, bringing paid media into the mix with influencer marketing and amplifying content. Affiliate marketing, you know, not necessarily new, but the intersection of affiliate influencer is something that's definitely picked up. So along with that, also building out the process, the best practices, the internal documentation, and then thought leadership. But it's really cool. I love it. The day-to-day is a little different. Sometimes it might just be working on resources. Sometimes I might get pulled into, you know, not an issue, but a potential opportunity and kind of, you know, provide knowledge around that and potentially a path forward, but also maybe lead that in terms of figuring it out. And so it's challenging. It keeps me up at night as far as just trying to figure out, you know, find the solutions to problems. But I really like it. It allows me to kind of utilize the skills that the things that I think I do well.
That's very cool. And I love the fact that, you know, part of what you're doing is, you know, sort of observing what's happening out there, coming up with really cool ideas that you pass along to your account team, and also kind of keeping them abreast of, you know, what the trends are in terms of what creators are doing that might be new and innovative. So I wonder, you know, if you look out there over the course of the next, let's say 6, 12, 18 months, you know, what's changing in terms of the influencer partnerships and creativity? What are brands and or creators doing from a collaborative standpoint today, or what will they be doing in the next few months that's going to be new and different that we can look out for?
Yeah, I think the first thing, it's not necessarily new or different, and I think most people have noticed, but I think a lot of influencer marketing is going towards being more creator-led. So, you know, as marketers, we typically give a creator a brief and say, hey, you say this and that, and you cover these checkpoints. And while that's really important in terms of branding and, you know, making sure you get the product guidelines based on your product or service, but we're realizing creators know their audience best. And so I think there's going to be more flexibility for creators and more marketers, allowing creators to take their product or service and figure out how they can integrate it in their content and their lifestyle in a way that is more authentic and connects with their audience, since they've taken the years and time to build up that audience, right? And so I think there's going to be a little more flexibility. One thing also is just the different use cases for creators too, like, historically, a lot of people are just activating creators on Instagram and TikTok now to create content and include messaging. I think people are going to kind of work with creators a little more outside the realm of content creation. So bringing them in for research, bringing them in for product feedback, you know, even bringing them on board as consultants and advisors. I think this past week, I can't remember the exact examples, but there's been so many creators that have been hired for, you know, director, you know, creative director roles, or you know, chief creator officer. And so they're being able to leverage their content creation ability, their ability to really, you know, create an audience into 9-to-5 gigs and really executive gigs if you think about it. So I see more of that, and I just see the industry continue to evolve, and I see the everyone becoming a creator, right? Like, everyone's a creator already, but just that amplifying as more people realize that no matter what you can do, there's a way to kind of, you know, share that with the world. There's a way to monetize it, whether it's through brand partnerships, whether it's, you know, through a community subscription, whether it's through selling product. And so more people are going to be able to, you know, have these little side gigs or even full-time gigs as a creator. I would say, so those are the main things I see. And then me and the Maverick CEO, Lyle, were actually talking about this, and this kind of goes back to one of my earlier points. If you think about any problem that a marketer or brand has, you can really take a creator and like plug them into that. And one of the great examples that he used was like customer service. And so, you know, you go to a site, you want to figure out like, hey, I need help with this product. I need help with this. Or like, I want this type of product. There could be a creator or a group of creators on the other side that kind of function as customer service and use the expertise to, you know, guide you to the right product or service or to provide feedback. And so there's so many different ways that creators can be used. And I think the brands that bring creators deeper in their business, whether it's bringing them on board full time or just having them an extension of their team, are going to be the ones that stand out. They're going to be the ones that, you know, shake up the industry, make noise, and do things that us marketers that aren't doing, because, you know, we can be so narrow minded and like taking a brief and, you know, straight KPIs and all those different things that we're not always able to think outside the box, especially when it comes to an agency type role, right?
Yeah, I would love to have, especially for the emerging platforms where, you know, traditional advertising creatives may not necessarily have a lot of experience certainly not in creating for, but, you know, also probably don't have a lot of experience playing on them. But like, you know, Twitch and TikTok and some of these emerging platforms, even Snapchat still, I would love to have a creative director on staff at Cornette, who that's why we hired them, because they know how to create in these emerging platforms. And I wouldn't even care if they went to art school or if they had, you know, a book of a portfolio of all the ads that they'd worked on. I'd rather much, you know, have them say, just go to my TikTok page and see all the bazillions of, you know, followers and engagement and whatnot I have, because I know how to create in these platforms. I think that could be, you know, a job description of a creative director, art director, copywriter type person of the future. So
I would say one more thing too is, in terms of creators, I see like creators moving a lot more towards these own audiences. And so right now with the social media platforms changing and algorithms, and I think even as a small time creator, you know, share, you know, working with some brands, within the outdoor space, I get frustrated too, because engagement's shot, you know, people aren't seeing the content. And so I think a lot of creators are getting frustrated with the algorithms and just how often those things are changing. While they're keeping engagement up for the average user and for the platforms, they're not always super friendly for the creator. So I see a lot of creators moving into newsletters, podcasts, websites, and kind of going back to channels or moving towards channels that allow you to really own that audience and that communication and audiences that are really engaged. Like, you know, the people that listen to your podcast, like, they opt in to listen to it. It's not so much as coming through a news feed. And so they're not only the right audience, but they really care what you say. And they're going to probably care a little more than someone that just scrolls through a news feed and comes across a piece of content.
Spoken like a true blogger. Own your content. Yeah, we've talked about that. In fact, I think I had a commentary, you know, episode a few episodes ago where I basically said that I think this trend is going to happen, that with the, you know, the OnlyFans controversy and the, you know, Facebook constantly being weird and now getting even more weird with the metaverse. I think that you're going to see a lot more creators be like, hey, let's put some content on this website or on this blog. Let's do an email newsletter. Let's start to own not just the content, but the audience as well. And I think that's going to open up the door for a lot of what I would consider kind of old school influencers, the bloggers and the podcasters and the email, you know, marketers, to kind of maybe have a little bit of a comeback, especially in the B2B space. But maybe also in B2C as well. Lindsay, man, this has been a great conversation. Where can people find you online if they want to connect?
Yeah, all things Lindsay Gambo. So that's Lindsay with an E, not an A. I love connecting with people on LinkedIn, Twitter. It's Lindsay Gambo _ Instagram, Lindsay Gambo _. But yeah, I love connecting with people in the industry. Happy to, you know, chat, you know, provide guidance, whatever it is, connect, share ideas. But yeah, feel free to reach out.
Well, let's don't miss the opportunity to also send people to maverick.com. That's MAVRCK.com, because it's a heck of a platform too. Lindsay, man, thanks so much for the time today.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Winfluence, the Influence Marketing Podcast, is presented by my book, Winfluence, Reframing Influencer Marketing to Ignite Your Brand. Get your copy online at winfluencebook.com. While you're there, sign up for the latest ideas about influence marketing delivered in my monthly newsletter, or book me to speak to your company or organization about influence marketing. If you or someone you know is an influencer, a brand manager that uses influence marketing, or one of the many amazing people working in the influence marketing services world, and they would make a good guest for the show, email me at jason@jasonfalls.com. Our theme music is One More Look by the K-Club and Grammy Award-winning producer Jaquire King. Thanks for listening, and remember, when it's not about the person, but about results, it's Winfluence. This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.